Thank you, Dave. All right. We can take our Bibles tonight. We're going to go into turn for tonight to 2 Chronicles chapter 27. So tonight we'll be looking at 2 Chronicles 27, and we're going to cover the whole chapter, but take a deep breath. It's only 9 verses. And we'll be looking at, as Dave mentioned earlier, King Jotham. And I titled this is just one message, A Godly Example in Dark Days. Interesting short study here. So we'll be doing this tonight. So again, 2 Chronicles 27, verses 1 through 9. King Jotham, A Godly Example in Dark Days. Next week, we will start looking at sort of a combination. We're going to look at the Davidic covenant, but in particular, I'm going to look at one piece of it after we study it, which is what's the difference between God's throne and the promised Davidic throne. So a little bit of both, because they all come, that both of those topics kind of merge together. But we'll talk about that next week. I'm going to give you the outline in just a minute. I'm going to quote from somebody I wouldn't normally quote from. It's just meant to be a little funny. But it's Mark Twain. Probably heard of Mark Twain before. But the quote's kind of interesting. It says, few things are harder to put up with than the annoyance of a good example. Now, I don't know if I really feel that way, but interesting quote. I've never quite felt that way, but I don't know. I guess maybe that's some truth. But tonight, in all seriousness, though, we're going to be looking at the life of Jotham. He's one of the kings of Judah. And partly why I did that was just a little bit of humor, because it's kind of a strange quote. But he is an example, though, of a lot of things. But largely, I'm going to try to show where he's a very good example of a godly king who lived among ungodly people. A lot of times when we look at the kings of Judah, you'll notice that if the king is good, a lot of times we kind of think that the people will reciprocate, we might say, or continue to be good. In this case, it's completely opposite. The king is really good, but for whatever reason, and we just don't know, there was no spiritual change in the people. And the main thing that we'll see is that Jotham was a godly king. He lived among ungodly people, and he didn't allow them to change the way he was. And he remained a godly individual, probably one of the, dare I say, cleanest descriptions of an individual. And what I mean by that is, if you think of Daniel, there's nothing negative said about him. He's pretty close here as well. But let me give you the outline. It's easy. All of it starts with Jotham's. So J-O-T-H-A-M apostrophe S. All of these do. Thought it'd just be easy. Jotham's godly character, that will be verses 1 and 2. I'll do a little bit of where are we in biblical history, or history in general, and that'll be verses 1 and 2. So we'll look at his godly character. Then after we do that, we'll look at Jotham's godly accomplishments, and that's in verses 3 through 6. So Jotham's godly accomplishments, that's verses 3 through 6, and then we'll see Jotham's godly ending, and that's in verses 7 through 9. So again, verses 1 and 2, his godly character. And then we'll see his godly accomplishments, and those are going to be pictures of what would be typically described as an accomplished Davidic king. But the accomplishment or the success is hindered off of one piece. And then we'll see in verses 7 through 9 his godly ending. Before we read, because we're going to read these in three parts. I think it'll just be easier so we can look at it. But before we do his godly character, which is verses 1 and 2, let me just remind us of where we are in history. Of course, biblical history, one and the same, but in any event. So before we do that, and we look at verses 1 and 2, I'm going to describe just briefly the historical setting in the background. I'm not suspecting that you don't know this, but I just think it will help us to make sure we're where we need to be. So I typically start with Abraham. God promised Abraham. We've looked at this before, the Abrahamic covenant. One of those pieces is that Abraham would be the father of a great nation. We know that to be the nation of Israel, obviously. And in the course of time, we know in the scripture that David, of course, would ultimately be the king. I know there's King Saul, King David. And then after that, we have Solomon. So you have King Saul, King David, and then King Solomon. And then the kingdom, does it stay together or does it divide? It divides, right? And so you have the northern, the southern kingdom. The northern is typically, if you think of like in the Psalms, sometimes it'll say Israel. Not always, but a lot of times that's the northern kingdom. If you read Judah, though, that's the southern kingdom. So just remember that. And the reason I mention that is the period of time in which Jotham lives. He lives during the period of the kings. Okay. Now, specifically, he is part of the southern kingdom, which is Judah. So you've probably seen me use the chart, the map and stuff on in the screen. So just visualize in your head. If you ever get confused, after Solomon, you have two kingdoms and they go this way. The northern is always Israel. Southern is always Judah, maybe Benjamin if it gets mentioned, but that's what you're looking at. Now, Jotham, though, was part of the southern kingdom, and I'll give you a couple of references here. These aren't paramount. Obviously, this couple of them are, but just some of this is just general information to try to get you to understand the setting, because the setting helps us understand a little bit more about who he is, because we don't have but a few verses on him. But the his life is told, obviously, here, 2 Chronicles 27. We know that, verses 1 through 9. There's another description of him, and it's in, anybody want to guess? You can typically guess it's going to be in this book, 2 Kings. You can always, more often than not, assume if it's a southern king, in other words, if it's the king of Judah, you'll find him in Chronicles, but you'll also find him in Kings, okay? Because the chronicler is heavily focused on the Davidic kingdom. But anyway, it's 2 Kings 15, 32 through 38. It's almost the same. It's very short. Has a few little variances, but again, his life is told, obviously, 2 Chronicles 27, 1 through 9, and then 2 Kings 15, meaning chapter 15, 32 through 38. His father, does anybody happen to know, remember who his father is? Just look at chapter 26, Uzziah, okay? That's U-Z-Z-I-A-H. If you are interested on YouTube, I did do a study on him a while back, if you're interested. But his father was godly, and as you'll see with Jotham, he is as well. He's contrasted a lot with his father. Does anyone remember his son's name? You can find it in chapter 28. Yep, Ahaz. And Ahaz was evil. I mentioned this to you for a couple of reasons. You can sort of figure in your mind where I go with this. So you have Uzziah produces a godly son, but Jotham produces an ungodly son. Sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes there's an ungodly king, and the son that is produced is godly. The main thing I would mention with that is, each individual person is responsible for themselves. And that a parent, in this case, that's a godly parent, cannot always produce a godly offspring. Does that make sense? You just can't guarantee that that's going to happen. So just to keep in your mind. So his father was godly, Uzziah. Probably will recognize him in a minute when I reference one of the prophets. He had an ungodly son, Ahaz. And so, of course, good lives can, but not always follow. That's the key. Not always, but they can, and we should endeavor to. Story for another day. Three prophets that lived during his period of time would be Isaiah, Isaiah, Micah, and then Hosea. That would be just sort of a general period. So the prophets Isaiah, Micah, and Hosea. And I'll reference the first two a little bit. Now, oftentimes, if you read anything on Jotham, he is oftentimes referred to as the, I'm just using this as air quotes, what might have been. And you might say, what does that mean? I'm going to read you this quote by Thomas Constable, and I'll explain it. It's somewhat self-explanatory, but that's oftentimes what he's described as. It's not necessarily a negative, but what might have been. What does that mean? Well, Constable says, in spite of his goodness, the people of the southern kingdom continued to act badly. So during this period of time, the people by and large are not faithful to God, but the king is. It's a little bit unusual because a lot of times the two go together. If one's evil, the other is evil. Sometimes a good king will produce a change in the people. And so whenever you, if you ever come across and study about what might have been, it's not necessarily a negative on him, the king. It's just that there was no spiritual revival, okay? And we'll see that in a minute. And obviously that's very important because the spiritual revival is what's most important. You'll see here, there's military campaigns, there's building campaigns. You might think of all these types of things. But inside of God, the people didn't change. And that's why he's often called the what might have been king. All right, I need an adventurous reader to read the first two verses. And the long reading is the second one for those long readers. If you like a short reading, I would pick either the first or the third. Anybody want to read verses 1 and 2? And then we're going to look at his godly character. Go ahead.
Jotham was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years. However, he did not enter the temple of the Lord, but the people continued acting corruptly.
All right. Thank you, Connie. All right. So we start looking here. I gave you a little bit of the background on where he's at. So this is obviously during the period of the kings, Second Chronicles, Second Kings area. And some basic information about him is he's 25 years old when he began to reign. We know he reigned 16 years. One thing to note here is he did co-reign with his father. So if you were interested, wanted to read about Uzziah, his father, you'll see that's a typical thing. They co-reign sometimes towards the latter period of a king's life. But in any event, 25 years old, and he reigned 16 years. He did co-reign with his father a little bit. You'll see his mother is mentioned there. Good job with the pronunciation, because I had trouble with that myself, actually. You'll notice his mother is a daughter of Zadok. So that's implying there the reason why the chroniclers mention it is that is a very prominent name in terms of Israel. So His mother is a daughter of Zadok. So that's just showing that he has a prominent background, his family. But notice the description there after we get past verse 1. That's the typical way in which the kings are introduced. You have the sort of transition. It tells you how long and some basic information about the family. But verse 2 is where we find what sometimes is what I call the anomaly. A lot of times you read the kings, you probably see this a little bit more in the Kings versus Chronicles, where it'll say they did what in the sight of God? Typically it's evil. More often than not, it's evil, evil, evil. And then you come across the anomalies that they do good and that sort of thing. But here you'll see where Jotham is said to have done right in the sight of God. One of the things to pick up on there is just the very simple reading is that in the Lord's view, he did right. Okay. Doesn't matter what the people may have thought of him, but the estimation of God is what's important. Now, of course, he followed, you'll notice as well, in the footsteps of his father Uzziah. So that's what you see in the previous chapters there on Uzziah, if you're interested. But he followed him in a similar way. But again, I would mention that to you. When you read and come across these, the estimation isn't what the people's view is, okay? Someone could view you as really good. That'd be sort of like saying, would I rather it say Decatur Bible Church viewed me good, or would I rather it say the Lord viewed me good? Well, it's the latter, right? Now, the other is just great. That's fine. But that's the thing. So what it's showing is that God's estimation of him was good, and that's what we should endeavor. We shouldn't be endeavoring so much for what people think, but what's God's view? And the other may come, but if not, so be it. Now, he does differ from his father, if you notice in here, in one thing. It says, however. So when Connie was reading it, he did right in the sight of God, according to all that his father had done. However, so there's something that distinguished him from Uzziah, his father. It says he did not enter the temple of the Lord. All right, I'm going to give you the two viewpoints on that, and I'll explain both of them. The first one somewhat self-explanatory. But generally what you'll do is if you look at that, what is the differentiation between his father and himself? Notice it says, however. So there's something that's different. Well, it tells you what it is. He did not enter the temple. But what does that mean? Two viewpoints. I'll give you both. The first is that he avoided the temple because he was bitter. Now, why would he be bitter? Why would he be upset? Okay, that's what the typical number one view is. That's a little bit more of a minority view, but that is, if you have a study Bible, that's what some people will say. The second one is that he did not commit the same error that his father did. Okay, but let's look at this and see. I'm telling you these because you need to understand, and please don't take me as being sort of snarky here. People sometimes interpret some verses different. Does that make sense? But we need to acknowledge the two views, but then we need to come to the conclusion of how did people come up with that? So the first view, and it's a minority view, is that he avoided going into the temple because he was upset at what happened to his father. Second view is that he didn't commit the same error as his father. And I actually think that's what the text teaches. But let's look at this. Look at chapter 26. And I'll show you how to look at this if you're not familiar. You're still going to go to heaven if you think he was bitter, but we do need to try to look at what the answer is. Let me just read it real quick. So it said, this is of his father, Uzziah. But when he, that's Uzziah, became strong, his heart was so proud that he acted corruptly, and he was unfaithful to the Lord his God. Notice, for he entered the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Now, whose job was that? Was that the priest or the king's?
Priest.
Okay. What's he doing? Something he shouldn't do. Right? He shouldn't have done that. What happens to his father? I actually will reference it later. He ends up with leprosy. Okay? So the first view is just that the reference to he didn't enter the temple is that he was bitter that happened to his father. I don't view that way. And I can kind of show you in the text, I don't think that's the correct reading. But the second interpretation, which is the more majority view, which is that he did not commit that same instance. So in other words, he let the priest do the priest jobs and he did his king job. King Saul had that problem, didn't he? Remember? What did King Saul do? He did what Samuel should have done, right? That's kind of the idea there. It's a loose example of it. But the idea there is that the priest has certain duties that only the priest could do. And no matter how great the king was, he couldn't do the priestly duties. The priest had certain criterias and requirements. I also think in the text, now if you go back down to verse 2, if you read the text, it says, and then we'll move on. He didn't write in the sight, this is 2 Chronicles chapter 27, verse 2. He said, so Jotham did write in the sight of the Lord according to all that his father did. However, he did not enter the temple of the Lord. So imagine he didn't go into the temple of the Lord. He didn't burn incense. He didn't do the priest's job. But the people continued to act different. I think the text, the way it's written, you wouldn't say that somebody did evil, but the people also did evil. But is showing a contrast. What's the contrast with Jotham and the people? Jotham did things according to what God said. It's not picturing perfection, but he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. He did not do what his father did, which is go in and do a duty that was only for the priest. But the people were the ones who acted corruptly. So what it's doing is it's showing that Jotham was a man who was a good king, as we would call him, but the people were not. They were what? They were corrupt. Let me read this to you here. Knapp, in his commentary, puts it this way. He says, God's people are only as safe as they adhere carefully and closely to the very letter of the Word of God. The slightest digressions are often the prelude to wide and grave departures from obedience to God's will as revealed in His Word. So the point is, disobedience in the smallest detail is still what? Disobedience, right? I mean, it's sort of like a child. You know, if you give them 100 things to do and they do all of 99 and they do one, are they obedient or disobedient? So are we disobedient to God by just sort of shading around the edges? We are still guilty. But the people, if you notice here, and this is one of the important things, the very end, but the people continued to act corruptly. I'll just give you these as references. You're free to read them or not. If you want to know some of the general conditions, this would be just a generalization. You can use the prophets to find these. You could read anything in Micah because it's not very long. But if you wanted to, read Isaiah 1 through 5. Because when you get to Isaiah 6, King Uzziah has died. So it'll kind of give you a glimpse of what the people were like. Okay, just as a picture. I'm not saying it's a one-to-one. But it'll give you a general time period. What were the people like? Read Isaiah chapter 1 through 5, and you'll get a pretty good description, and it isn't good. Okay? So that would be the backdrop through which it's seen. So Jotham, we see in verses 1 and 2, is seen as good despite the people's behaviors. Very unusual description. But he was good because he followed the Lord's ways, even when those around him did and would not. He didn't allow others' behavior to corrupt him. Can we do that? Yep. We can allow people who are either corrupt or doing things that are disobedient to impact us, and we need to stay away from that. We need to follow the Lord regardless. That's a lot of ways, a good way to put his life. But let's move on here. So in verses 3 through 6, which Gene, I'm pretty sure is going to be the reader there. I have a pretty good guess. Jotham's godly accomplishments. But before she reads it, I'm just picking, I figure she probably will. But what the chronicler is going to do is he's going to give this list. And this list is of godly accomplishments that he does, okay? So we see his character. He's going to accomplish these things. And these things, you need to remember, what the chronicler is doing is picturing him as accomplishing things that you would expect from a good Davidic king. But he accomplishes them not because of himself, okay? So let's look at that in a minute. But read 3 through 6, and we'll look at the accomplishments, but we'll see how he accomplished them.
He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord, and he built extensively the wall of Ophel. Moreover, he built cities. The Amorites also paid him this amount in the second and in the third year. So Jotham became mighty because he ordered his ways before the Lord his God.
All right. Thank you, Gene. All right. So we start looking at these. The first two things we're going to look at is, again, you have to think of what the chronicler is doing, meaning the author of the book, if you're not familiar with the phrase. What he's doing is, throughout the book of Chronicles, if you ever read them, he tends to be very favorable to the Judah, meaning Davidic kings. That's largely what he's doing. He's picturing the Davidic kings. He's not picturing them perfectly, but he does picture them typically in a favorable manner. But he's trying to show them as, if you will, offspring of David. But anyway, how and why would I even say that? Well, notice the first thing he does, he's very big on building projects. Again, that would be a very Davidic, if you will, kingly type of things, building projects. So you can look at some of these. For instance, the upper gate, that's the north entrance to the temple. This is just sort of a summary. So the building projects, you think of the upper gate, that's the north entrance to the temple. Then you have the wall of Ophel, if I'm pronouncing it right. It almost looks like pronounce it a few different ways, tomato, tomato. But there, that is... that wall ran south of the Temple Mount. So he's there building. That's a typical thing you would expect a Davidic king to do. So he builds the upper gate. That's the north entrance to the temple. And then towards the south mount, or the south part of the Temple Mount, that's the wall there. But then you'll also see there it says city, fortresses, and towers. So these are outposts and other places. Now these would have added security to the city. So that's sort of a synopsis of what that is. So the building projects would have been gates, walls, cities, fortresses, and towers. He's not the ideal Davidic king, but he does give a picture of what one would do, which is, if you will, build things and provide security for the nation of Israel. Of course, he wouldn't be a Davidic king if he didn't have success in what other area, which is warfare, military. Yep. Got to be a king to have successful war. You'll see there are a couple of things, one of which is he defeated the Amorites. That's east of the Jordan. And that is, in a sense, describing peace instead of war. In other words, sometimes they would go and they would annihilate an enemy or subdue them. And, of course, that would produce peace, at least for a period of time. There's no lasting peace until when? Well, not until Jesus actually returns one day, even for you and I. Should we expect there to be war today? If not, go turn on the news for a few weeks and you'll find that we just have endless wars. But anyway, moving on. The next one is the interesting, and it's part of the military success. But if you notice when Gene was reading his first five, so he fights these battles, he overcomes the Amorites. But notice the tribute that he was received there. That's quite a lot, isn't it? I read this. I thought it was just an interesting fact. Don't quote me on the precision of it, but it's probably pretty close. It says 100 talents of silver is about 3.4 metric tons. A lot of tons, isn't it? So about 100 talents of silver is about 3.4 metric tons. So he was really successful, wasn't he? But why was he successful? I mean, was he just really good at building things? Was he really good at destroying the enemies? What was his secret? What was his, I use this word strategy. What was his strategy for what I would call true success? Because, you know, you could be evil and build things. You could be evil and have wars that you win, but he's not being described that way. What is the verse 6? Verse 6 in many ways is sort of the theme of his life. It's a repeat a little bit, but it's a little bit more specific than what we saw earlier on. In verse 6, it says, so Jotham became mighty because he ordered his ways before the Lord his God. So his success came through how? God, following God's ways. Now you might be thinking, well, we all do that, don't we? If you take the book of Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, and go back and compare it to 2 Kings, and you read both of them, they fail most of the time because of that. Because they don't. It's so obvious that that's what we're supposed to do. That it's so obvious that that's what we're supposed to do, so often we don't do it. Success is based off of following God. It hasn't changed because now we're in the age of the church. And so he ordered his ways before the Lord. It's the theme of the opposite of the people. What were the people doing? They were largely being, it starts with a D, disobedient. Jotham was obedient. Can you imagine being in a leadership role when you think of a king and his desire is godliness and he wants the people to do that and they just won't? You'd almost wonder, and of course, there's no, I don't want to read into the text. You know, I don't like to do that. But, you know, you wonder, I mean, that would have been discouraging. You almost wonder if he was kind of ever like, you know, this is crazy. These people won't follow. It's interesting. It just makes, go back here. I want you to notice something, though, and it's described. And David does a good job of this type of description in like the Psalms, for instance. Is God foreign to somebody? In other words, is he sort of far off? Well, you can tell to him, to Jotham, he's not. Just like David, he calls him his God. That is showing a picture of fellowship. It's a personal relationship with God. You know, sometimes people speak of God and they're sort of just describing this man up in the state. You can tell they don't have a relationship with him. It's just sort of this tag. But you can tell here that he ordered his steps, but it was according to his God. In other words, the Lord was his God. So what the chronicler is doing here is that he is saying that often these attributes are what trigger or the types of things that are successful in a person's life is when they walk in the ways of God. Israel was oftentimes not successful because they didn't walk in the ways of God. When they did, they could overcome many, many obstacles. I was reading recently in Isaiah, and it's 37, 38, 39, and Hezekiah has this massive onslaught that's getting ready to come, and they're going to just completely destroy Israel and take them over. What does he do? Well, he doesn't get a bigger army. He prays. And God delivers them. I mentioned that just to tell you that the reason why the people were successful was not because of themselves. They depended on God. They walked with God. And they did the things that he asked them to do. I'm going to read you this quote. It says, like his father, Jotham became powerful with the Lord's help. But notice, but unlike Uzziah, Jotham apparently did not forget the true source of his strength. Uzziah is an interesting one because he's a good king, but he also has a negative side to him, which is he became prideful and did what he shouldn't have, and he did have consequences. And those consequences, like I mentioned to you before, he died with them. But let's look at verses 7 through 9. So we've seen that Jotham has godly character. He doesn't allow the people around him or the culture around him, in other words, the people in which he rules, to warp him. He goes and he has these godly accomplishments, but they're because of God, because he was saying, I'm going to walk in the ways of God. Probably a good lesson for our young people, isn't it? To remember if they want to have true success, it's to walk with God, that type of thing. But you'll see that even in his death, he ends in a godly way, and he actually gets a better ending of his life than Uzziah, and it's not just leprosy. Somebody read 7 through 9, and then we'll finish up.
Now the rest of the acts of Jotham, even in the, and they buried him in the city of David, and Ahaz,
his son became king in his place.
All right. Thank you, Linda. All right. So as we look to finish up here, this is Jotham's godly ending. His life is brief. It's relatively quiet. It's interesting. I mean, this is a fairly lengthy period of time just in history. But in any event, you'll see where he's honored. He's going to be given an honor of a Davidic king proper. It's a little bit of a nuance, though, with his father. His father's a good king. But let's look at that for a second. Notice how it ends. So it's just sort of recapping verses 7 through 8, most of what we've already seen. You see there's the reference to the book of Kings. If you did want to read it, there's a few little verses here and there, nothing too substantial there. But you could read it if you wanted to pick up a few extra items. But the main thing I want us to look at, though, is verse 9. So he dies, you know, slept there is a euphemism for death. But you'll notice they bury him in the city of David. So he's honored in his death because of his life and his character. Obviously, he had a good godly character. He reflected what you would think of as a Davidic king. Although he's not the fulfillment of the Davidic ideal king, that's Jesus. Actually, we'll start looking at that next week. But he's also buried differently than his father. I included this because I want you to see why there's this difference. Look at verse 23 of chapter 26. So, in other words, verse 23 of the previous chapter. So, Uzziah slept with his father. So, same thing. But notice they buried him with his fathers in the field of the grave which belonged to the king, for they said he is a leper. So in that case, he's buried outside the city because of his leprosy. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it? Both good kings. Uzziah ends on somewhat of a sour note, you might say, which sometimes does happen. They start off good and they don't always quite finish that well. But Jotham's not like that. And what does it remind me of? It reminded me that we need to live faithfully and humbly so that our life and legacy is honored when we die. I mean, we want to be honored. Have you ever known somebody that's died and they've had a good, if you will, life and we've honored them? He is, and many people don't tend to think of him. They skip over him. A couple of things we could learn from his life. I know his life's brief, but I'll just give you three. There's others, but these are just three ones that are probably obvious. Like Jotham, stay true to God's commands, even when those around us choose not to. That's probably one of the key lessons I would say with him. Two, probably is the key one, is true success comes from ordering our ways before the Lord. That's really what makes those kings and the people good and have a good life. And then finally, a godly life leaves a godly legacy. And that's what we want.